Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
And from the border of liberty and prosperity and the highway to the north, this is Safety Wars for updates, February 21st, 2000. How's everybody doing out there? Only one more month of this thing we call winter. Thank God. It's just dragging on and on and on and on and on. Coming up very shortly. I was talking to Jay Allen today via text message. Very shortly, we're coming up to season number 4 of the show here. Who would have thought? Over 300 episodes here for you to see some. We got a whole bunch of new listeners out there, people I've been interacting with. What's nice is that when I get home from field work, it's still light out a little bit. I got to see people who I haven't seen all year. Just now, it's night out, and they're out walking their dog, walking the neighborhood, doing their thing. My four-legged furry friends were very happy to see me today. It's funny, I'm one of those people that gets to know the dogs before I get to know people. It's one of those things. I don't know. I like animals. So, where we've been, I've been handling a lot of crises out there, not created by me. So, I got a job this past week from a client who's interested in doing business in the United States. And I had to do a little bit of an intro to OSHA thing with them. And I'm probably going to be doing that as a podcast here, as an episode, right? It may be one of those things that I go and I show one time, and then won't show it again because that's just the way it is. I know Jay Allen was talking about on the Radar Safety Show giving away things for free, and you know there's an argument to be made for that because I tell you what, a lot of this human organizational performance stuff came from the Department of Energy. It's open source on their a lot of their research. There's been other research done on this, so it's all out there in the public domain anyway. If you're a U.S. taxpayer, you paid for it. But a lot of times things are packaged a little bit differently, a little bit uniquely. And if you're a regular listener, you know, I often don't pull any punches with things. And tonight is going to be one of those nights that I don't pull any punches. We get stuff sent to us all the time by listeners. And a lot of it's like, well, that's good. That's good. And no, I really can't go into this. But on this one, I was like, you know, I should go into this because it's like this. We work here at Safety FM. I mean, all of the podcasters and hosts and everything else. We work with a lot of organizations where people get hired to do work for. And these organizations get the hop stuff going on. But then, and then you get this. You get the senior level people at that organization get the hop presentation. I know that they did do. All right. And then when they go and back to their organization, so we understand here, organizational change takes a long time. My experience, minimum 3 to 5 years. for organizational change. But a lot of these folks are getting the information on human and organizational performance like 10 years ago. And I do understand that often this safety stuff is transient, meaning you get promoted into the health and safety stuff for whatever reason, and then you're there for 2 or 3 or 4 years, especially in the organization we're going to talk about tonight, and then you move on to something else. And basically, you get, you know, some joke people jokingly say you get promoted to the highest level you're in competence. Now, that's a joke. But oftentimes, okay, I'm not a safety professional. I'm going to be put into the position of as a safety professional. Very little training, very little knowledge. I might be a great engineer. I might be a great scientist. I might be a great whatever. But now I get thrown into this thing. And for new folks in the safety field that are listeners or viewers here, how long does it take you to learn that craft? It's not automatic. It's not boom, boom, we're going to learn it. Takes years. And often safety is seen as a non-money-making position, your overhead. So a lot of organizations, even the larger ones, do not put a lot of money and time or anything into professional development. Or the other people that are involved. I mean, even Todd Conklin in him and Jay Allen and other people from this network were at a huge global safety conference in Australia. He even shares a story where a guy answered a phone during a class of his, right? And he says, well, it doesn't suck as bad as I thought, was the comment. And that always gets, right? So you get people very down on safety because it's not presented right, or now, people, how many times can you learn to use a ladder properly? Let's face it. Right. So they send people to safety training and then it's a nightmare. I worked in an organization where people actually have post-traumatic stress disorders from 8-hour HAZWOPR courses. They refused, my entire tenure there, they refused to go to 8-hour HAZWOPR courses because they were that hellish with the presenter. But anyway, I digress. But let me go circle back. Again, I'm off in the weeds. Let me circle back here. So this organization has known about HOP for many years. But for whatever reason, it's not being adapted by the organization. And the safety incident that we're going to read to you here is a prime example to that. So we're going to take a brief commercial break here, and then we're going to come back to you with this story. I have to set it up a little bit. This is Safety Wars, broadcasting to our brothers and sisters in the occupied territory of behavior-based safety. Get out your secret decoder ring. Here is your nightly message.
Human error is normal. Human error is normal.
Okay, so we're going to ask you here, and hold on here. I get yelled at for not doing this. You know, people comment. Here you go.
Safety Wars is streaming now. SafetyFM.com.
All right, so here we are. And so this organization sets up goals every year. And this is a very large organization. I'm not going to mention what it is. And here we have their combined total recordable rate for this facility is less than 0.1. So we know what the total recordable rate is for in safety, and we know the calculation. If you're not sure what that is, you go and look it up. But basically, it's at averages all your incidents versus your work hours, and you come up with this rate. Now, when this organization is famous for going out there and saying, you're a bad contractor, you're an unsafe contractor, you're an unsafe organization if you don't meet this predestined goal. And they also have predestined this goal. And then they say, on top of that, they have one of those things that Sam Goodman always talks about, zero accidents, zero incidents, zero illnesses. They track this stuff all along. And what inevitably happens? They have an injury in January, right? And then you have to hear about that injury, and that becomes the focus of the whole organization's safety for the entire year. So they had one recordable injury this year, and they're at 0.34. So now, as if they have no more injuries this year, the 0.34 total recordable incident rate will inevitably go down. However, this organization, that doesn't happen because you got a lot of stuff going on here. And what the implication is that it's not a safe organization, at least when it comes around to managing their people, managing their contractors, and the upper level management managing the management of these facilities. And they're a company you've heard of. We'll leave it at that. So now the company, right, did not meet their goals so far, and now they're an unsafe company. Does that make sense? Now, here's my question for you. What is safety? I start out every one of my safety training classes, whether it's an outreach class, HAZWOPR class, fall protection class, confined space entry, any of the classes that we do here, and we're going to talk about defensive driving too. That's a new offering from us. We just developed on defensive driving. With all this stuff going on, what is safety? This is essential. Is safety zero accidents, zero incidents, zero illnesses, zero whatever, 0-0-0? But and then therefore the implication is if you have one accident, now you're unsafe. You're an unsafe, evil organization. Bad apples and everything else. Or is safety, capacity, and resilience? The amount of stuff that you could do, the amount of safeguards you could put into place, the amount of procedures, things of that nature you could put into place, and your ability to adapt, resiliency. And unless you're dealing with crazy people, Todd Conklin said it, you could catch it on the Jay Allen podcast. Jay Allen's show on your favorite podcast platform. He had said, every organization has psychopaths. If you don't know it, right? Sort of thing. No, well, we deal with psychopaths sometimes. I mean, I tell you what, we had incidents this week like you wouldn't believe dealing with people. And, you know, we effectively deal with those folks. And people don't want to get hurt, generally speaking. There are, generally speaking, I could name, and I'll drive people nuts. I can have a whole program on stories where we have people who went nuts and they wanted to get hurt. Well, one of the more famous stories I have is where a guy didn't like his work assignment for the next month. He was going to be doing something that would take about a month, month and a half, and it wasn't a very pleasant part of the job. So he said, you're going to give me another job, and Foreman says, no, this is the job that we have. This is what it is, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, like, he picked up a ball-peen hammer and smashed his own hand and broke it. You know, what do you do with that? Turned out to be a recordable. So, but anyway, we have people like that. But generally speaking, nobody wants to go to work to get hurt. People want to get a good job, do a good job, get home, everything else. People are not that way here, with some exceptions. But anyway, here we have I'm going to sanitize this one here, right? A confined space entry attendant left the confined space while personnel were still inside. Upon several individuals leaving the confined space, the attendant assumed that all entrants had exited the area and logged everyone out of the space. Once completing the log, they left the area for lunch. However, there were three entrants still inside the space. I'm not going to mention what kind of space it is, but it's space. A short time later, the four remaining entrants exited the space, right, to find out there was no confined space entry attendant. Now, what are the key lessons here? Entry, and again, this is the blame the worker situation. Entry and exit logs were not completed for the entrance, right? Worker badges were not collected upon entry and returned upon exit as required by the facility procedure. Now, I put this out here to a couple of safety professionals. And what do you think they said? And it was all of them. That GD worker, something along these lines, that GD worker, and that doesn't stand for good, should be fired for letting this happen. We got a bad apple. And I'm a little bit disappointed with this stuff here. Because all of these folks are regular listeners. All these folks, I know that they are. All these folks know about human and organizational performance. They know about all about this stuff. Now you may say, well, that worker needs to be fired. And 5 years ago, 6 years ago, that's what I would have said. The worker is horrible, bad apple, don't know what they're doing, blah, 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 got to get rid of them. 6 years ago, I might not. 10 years ago, 15, I probably would have said the same thing. So let's put this into perspective. Now, when this company reports this incident to everybody, this is what they put out. We have another one here. Right, another incident here that they sent me about this organization. And again, I'm not going to mention it because it's going to give the organization away. But it was like the same thing here. Blame the worker, blame this, blame that. The worker, the worker, the worker. We have right here in the safety world what is called the hierarchy of controls. Let's see if I could get that on the screen. We're familiar with what this is. It's we got it from here. Let's share this. We're familiar with this, the hierarchy of controls. And what is it? Let's get the right aspect here. All right, hierarchy of controls. On the top, you have, for you people who are listening at home, you have elimination. This is right from the Centers for Disease Control website. Elimination, substitution, engineering controls, and administrative controls. Those are the hierarchy of controls, right? We got expanded this. Now, what the idea here is this. The primary way that we try to eliminate hazards, so we have a hazard, and we're doing our hazard assessment, is to eliminate things, right? So you eliminate the hazard, substitute the hazard, meaning you replace the hazard, right, with a less dangerous hazard, less dangerous outcome. So, for example, the example I use is fall protection. People say, well, Jim, fall protection is PPE. Fall protection, great. But it's more of a substitution because you're still going to get hurt when you deploy fall protection. What the issue is that rather than a fatality or broken bones, now you have back injury, suspension trauma, or also known as orthostatic intolerance. You have all other things that may go on, but it's not a fatality, so you're substituting it. You have an engineering control. You're isolating people from the hazard. That's where your guarding comes in. Engineering controls, things of that nature. Now you have the last two that we're going to talk about with this incident. We have administrative controls and personal protective equipment. If you look on the left-hand side of this schematic from the CDC, what do you have? The most effective, and then you have the least effective. What's the least effective means of controlling things is what? Administrative controls and PPE. Right? Now, those are the now my question is this. If you're going to be concerned about safety and making things real safe and everything else, why would you rely solely on an administrative control and PPE? Administrative control changed the way people work. PPE, protect the worker with personal protective equipment. Those are the two but least effective means of managing anything. Why? What's an administrative control? It's a rule. Let me give you an example of a rule. One rule is that you have to go and do entry and exit logs on a permit required confined space, so you have accountability, because in the regulation, it doesn't say this exactly. Everyone uses different language, but in effect, you have to keep a log, a written log of who's in and who's out, or maybe another effective means. I've always argued for access control because we do have that technology. In this facility, it's badges where they're handing out badges to people, right? So you have an ID badge, and you hand that to the person. Now, they give this. All right, well, they weren't doing the. Now you're relying on the administrative controls. Now, here are some of they have key lessons. Let's talk about key questions. Right, we're told the Socratic method. This is what, and if you're doing a root cause analysis, and I ceased calling them root cause analysis, because what do you think my question is when I ask folks when I'm doing the accident investigation, especially if they're a new client? They say, well, Jim, we need to do an accident investigation. Well, okay, great. We're doing an accident investigation. They say, well, we use taproot analysis or root cause analysis. What do you think my next question is? Do you want a root cause analysis or do you want a root cause analysis? Well, you know what I mean by that. Oh, well, Jimmy, I don't know. Okay, so let's talk about the root cause analysis. My question is this. Entry and exit logs are not completed for the entrance. Why weren't they complete? They might have been not complete for a good reason. One, do you supply your confined space entry attendants with pens that work? What kind of log in and log out do you have? Is it that cheap El Cheapo carbon copy paper that you folks are handing out? Or is it something else that when you use a pen on it, it destroys it? So is it aggravating? Is it not very ergonomic? Do they have a clipboard? Did you supply a clipboard to your employee? So do the attendants, so they could do that? Guess what? Often doesn't happen. Did that attendant have 30 or 40 people in that space that they had to keep track of? Did that attendant have a lot of traffic coming in and out of that space, or maybe you need two attendants? Was there more than one entrance there? Did that attendant go and start screaming in there, hey, is everybody out of there? Did that happen? And if that attendant did do that, were the people willing to answer that? Or were they like, oh, F it. We just have a couple more minutes here, blah, blah, blah. And then an auditor came through and they said, well, I don't know where the attendant, that damn attendant not here. I don't know. Okay, those are all things not asked, answered in this document here. And I'm sure everybody here could, I mean, we have thousands of listeners. I'm sure that we can come out with more things. Okay, now, worker badges are not collected upon entry and return upon exit as required by the facility procedure. Now, here's a question for you, right? Okay, you have a badge here. Okay, here is your badge, right? This is a GoPro camera. Use that as prop. Here's the badge. I've been on sites where they had a problem with people's badges getting lost when you hand it to the confined space entry attendant. And then that badge is used for access control all over. Let's say you're going to be in that space for 3, 4, 5 hours, not unheard of on a shutdown or more. What if that badge, all right, you're afraid of that badge getting stolen and handed off to somebody else for nefarious reasons? That could happen. Again, this is a shutdown with thousands of people there. Hundreds, if not thousands of people. You don't know everybody. You would like to think that no one's going to do something funky with those badges. What if those attendant was there and asked the guys for the badges, and they give her, they're from New Jersey, they give someone, and they show them the state bird or give them the state salute. Think that happens? Yeah, that happens all the time. So now, let's talk about the worker. And Sam Kinison, the old comedian, had a punchline in one of his jokes. I'll clean it up. How the bleep did you get this job? That's not against the worker, by the way. How did the worker get the job? Was it through nepotism? I go into this when I do an acts investigation. How long have you had the job? What is your training on the job? What's your education level? Where's your calibration logs? Who's handling the calibration? All of these things get going to a confine. Where's your training certificate? And then I call up on the phone. I say, hey, dude, did you train this person? Is this person in your system? More than one time, person never received training to do that. So did this person have training? Did this person get awareness level training and not the full-blown confined space entry training? Do they have an industrial hygiene background? Do they know anything about, how's this? They have to have an OSHA outreach training certificate. Is that a legitimate OSHA outreach training certificate? Right? Did the company pay for that? Now you're saying, well, Jim, this is the worker. We're going to be done with the worker in a second here. All right. Next one. All right. How did the company get the job? Was it by competitive bid? Lowest bidder, or was it the lowest qualified bidder, or was it the qualified bidder, or was it because you took the owner of that company went out and took the management from the other company to a baseball game the year before? Did the owner of that company make some phone calls on behalf of one of the company managers whose granddaughter was going into a university that this guy was an alumni from? How about they're a new company and they don't have a history, but they have a total recordable incident rate of 1. Because they're no, or 0, or I'm sorry, experience modification rate of 1 because they're a new company. They got the thing, but hey, this well, we know them. We got people have experience. What kind of training does the company provide to the people? Is there a test that they can actually fail? How about background check? Did the person pass a background check? In the oil industry, like this is from, yeah, they probably did. They had a TWIC card thing. But TWIC card only is like with federal crimes and high-level crimes. How about the minor ones? A whole bunch of petty thefts. A whole bunch of petty crimes. What's the demeanor? Did you actually interview this person who was doing the job? Or did they just go, hey, we need to throw a body out there. Hey, here's a meter. Read the meter. Blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah. Do they actually understand what they're looking at here? This is all management's issue. They put someone possibly that is not well-equipped or well-versed as a confined space entry attendant. No experience on that. That's not the worker's fault. If they don't have the resources or anything, or the authority maybe these guys gave her this first and the bird walked in and the person has no authority on the job. How about the four workers that went into that that didn't hand in their IDs? Oh, now we're expanding things. What were this their training? What's their management like? All that goes into that. So how do they get the job? How do they do they understand how to use the equipment? Were they trained to use the equipment? Is it legitimate training? How about the incentives? Maybe they had a issue like this before. They reported it to their management. The manager said, well, hey, we're not going to be here to start trouble. We got another shutdown at another facility. Word's going to get around, blah, 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 blah. How's that? Does the management actually oversee their own employees? How's that? Whoever the confined space entry attendant company is, usually that's third party at this in this situation. Who do they do management? How long was that person on that job? That day? Were they a new employee? First time as an attendant? You're putting them into an impossible situation? Is that person expected to stay there for 5 or 6 hours at a time without a bathroom break? Oh, yeah, that happens. So I've seen that happen. Person has to go to the bathroom. Guess what? Now, well, that's a management issue. Are you rotating employees? Are you rotating them so they don't get friendly with the workforce? So maybe they can better manage this and follow the rules. All of this stuff, root cause analysis, and all this stuff points to not the worker. Yeah, the worker, yeah, we talked a lot about. But what about the management managing them? Did they make it clear? Rules. Were they aware of the rules? Did you communicate the rules? What you have to do. I know when I give confined space entry training for attendants, guess what? They get a sign-off sheet where these are what the regulations are. That way there's no question that they were not that they were told what the rules were. Did they do that? This facility point says, well, attendant. I say management, not doing their job. What was the incentive that they were working under? Oh, we're in a big hurry. Blah, 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 blah. We're in a big hurry. Well, guess what? You have that sort of thing, attitude. That's where you're going to have a problem come up. And who's communicating that? And why are they blaming the worker? I can tell you. At this facility, the owners, if it's still this way there, but for years it was that way with this facility, that the management's end-of-the-year bonus was was impacted by the total recordable incident rate. All right, so now you have these folks, used to call them the traveling roadshow, now directly impacting your bonus at the end of the year. All in there. Again, that's a management problem. So I want you to go home and think about it. In hindsight, what are we doing? Why are we relying on administrative controls and PPE, right, for hazards rather than elimination, substitution, and engineering? What are the controls? Let me circle back around that for a minute. What are the controls on the confined space? If you're relying on that worker there, doing their job right, and that's your only control, you're going to fail. People will die. People will get hurt. So what do we have? We have a lot of stuff. We have training. When you're going into this particular confined space, you have an electrical disconnect. You have lockout, tagout. You have double block and bleed and physical disconnect, creating an air gap of all things going into that confined space. You have a clean out that's going to eliminate all of the toxic potential for toxic and hazardous materials in there. If you are doing something that adds to atmospheric hazard, you're going to have ventilation. You have all the PPE that's in there. You have a lot of different things going on in there, and that all adds to the safety. So if one thing fails, now you have a backup. So you've eliminated all the hazards here, right? You've eliminated all the hazards for that space. You issued a confined space entry permit. All the hazards are eliminated. The checklists are done. Assessments are done. My question is this. What mode of work was the person in? Were they rules-based mode? Were they not lack of knowledge-based mode? Or were they skills-based mode? My guess is that they're new people that are probably in the rules-based mode, right? And they're in the rules-based mode versus skills-based mode, not experienced. And this could be used as a learning event. Nobody was really because they have all these controls in there, nobody was really in danger of anything. Should the attendant left? No. But we had all these other controls that were in here too. So just think about it, and we will go from there. Thanks a lot.
In the professional safety community, communication and planning are just a few keys to your program's success. The question many practitioners have is, where do I start? Dr. Jay Allen, the creator of the Safety FM platform and host of the Rated R Safety Show, has built a global foundation to help you along the way. Go to safetyfm.com and listen to some of the industry's best and most involved professionals, including Blaine Hoffman with the Safety Pro, Sam Goodman with the Hop Nerd, Sheldon Primus with the Safety Consultant, Jim Pozell with Safety Wars, Emily Elrod with Unapologetically Bold, and many others. As individuals, we can do great things, but as a team, we become amazing. Dial into safetyfm.com today and surround yourself with a powerful force of knowledge and support.
OSHA recordables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Pozell with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy!
In an unpredictable world, one voice rises above the chaos. Meet Jim Pozell, a seasoned safety expert who's navigated through some of the most dangerous scenarios, from anthrax, explosive cleanups, disasters, and numerous environmental cleanups, and lived to tell the tale. Now, he's bringing his wealth of knowledge, insights, and experiences to you through Safety Wars. From workplace hazards to the hidden dangers in your own home, Jim covers it all. With his engaging storytelling and expert analysis, Safety Wars isn't just a podcast. It's your guide to a safer world. Join Jim Pozell and become part of the Safety Wars revolution. Available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts and videos. Safety Wars, your safety is our mission.
So that took longer than I thought here going into that. But that's fine. I mean, we had to say that. We're going to talk about, there's our hierarchy of controls. Okay, we're going to talk about the OSHA news, right? So they had two press releases come out today. All right, one with, and just for complete disclosure, I know who this other firm is here. So the U.S. Department of Labor, this press release was from yesterday. U.S. Department of Labor's OSHA has cited steel fabrication business after finding the company willfully exposed workers to safety and health hazards at its Millville shop. OSHA issued citations, 4 willful and 7 serious violations against a certain company of proposed $348,000 plus in penalties. The agency's investigation began on July 26, 2023 in response to a complaint. Here's a quote. A few months before our inspection, the company hired a safety consultant. This is a quote here from OSHA Area Director Paula Dixon Roderick out of the Marlton area office. who identified, so the company hired a safety consultant who identified multiple safety and health hazards at the fabrication shop. However, the company failed to correct the hazards. Now, employers are legally obligated to provide a safe and healthful workplace for all workers. That is the general duty clause. And the company is family-owned and operated, blah, 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 blah. Now, this is where you get, my question is this. All right. How did OSHA find out? Who did the reporting? Was it an employee? Was it the consultant that they brought in who may not have gotten paid? That happens. I've heard of that already. Or a consultant that just saw stuff so egregious that they felt compelled to do it, right? Now, there's a couple of ways you can handle this. Let's say, and I've heard this from different attorneys, if you are a company and you are deciding to hire a safety consultant to come in and look at things, guess what? You have to be willing to hear and listen, and you have to be willing to take their advice. I'm not saying necessarily implement it, because I know some safety professionals go overboard. They often try to upsell people. But if it's a legal requirement, you're really supposed to do it. I don't know. So these things, right? Now, the other thing is this, right? For willful, how did they find out about that for willful? Was that in a report that was open for discovery by somebody? So, for example, OSHA is allowed to interview your employees. The employees don't have to be interviewed, but they're allowed to, in there. They still have a fifth and sixth amendment right, dealing with OSHA. They don't have to answer. I assume that may not be a very successful strategy, but you don't have to. Then one of the employees say, "Hey, oh yeah, we had this guy come in and blah 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 blah. He sold us this, and then they say, "Well, okay, great. I'd love to know how this happened." So here we go. The issued citations and the usual front matter here, and abatement form. Citation one, item one, right? And it doesn't say here how. Nope. Okay. So here, sorry for freaking you people out on the video here. Citation one, item one, type of violation serious. 29 CFR 1910-106. Category 1 or 2 flammable liquids. We don't see this one cited too often on these press releases. Or category 3 flammable liquids with a flash point below 100 degrees Fahrenheit, where it's dispensed into containers without the nozzle or container being electrically interconnected. So the employer did not ensure that a 55-gallon drum of a certain coating, a class 2 flammable, were grounded when dispensing flammable liquids, because there could be a static electric discharge, right? Because you have flowing fluid going through a nozzle or something like that. And what happens is, as the liquid goes over it, you strip off electrons from the surface of this potentially. And now with these free electrons, they got to go somewhere. They cause a spark, and now you have a fire. $6,453. Now, how much does one of those grounding things cost? You can get a real fancy one now. A couple hundred bucks max if you go for the real fancy one. The not so fancy one, $20. Here we have citation one, item 2A. The alleged violations will have been grouped because they involve similar or related hazards. Here we have that may increase potential or potential. So citation one, item 2A, respirator standard, 1910-134. Respirators with tight-fitting face fuses were worn by employees who had facial hair that came between the ceiling surface of the face fuse and the face, or that interfered with the valve function. This is an employee who was provided and required to wear a certain respirator, half face, was not clean shaven to ensure a sealing surface between the face and the face piece. That's, again, these are all proposed citations. They may be litigated, vacated, negotiated downward, right? Or upward. 48, right? So, again, this is, you might say, well, the worker wasn't clean shaven. Yeah, but the client was not enforcing rules. In our previous thing, my question is this. That's probably not the first time that happened with the IDs. Guess what? Was this allowed behavior? Was this encouraged? I don't know. Now, how are you going to abate this? Probably what I would do is make sure that every employee who has to wear a respirator would sign a affidavit saying that they were told that they had to be clean shaven. That's often what I do in these situations. Citation on item 2B, this is, again, respirator standard. The employer did not ensure that each employee could demonstrate knowledge of why the respirator was necessary, how it properly fit, uses, storage, maintenance, etc. On or about July 26, the employer did not ensure that each employee provided and required to wear a respirator, including but not limited to the respirator in question and a powered air purifying respirator, was trained and could demonstrate knowledge on fit, usage, maintenance of the respirator. Again, this is a training issue. And I'm going to say this. How did they get the job? Does the employee have the aptitude to answer that question or the demeanor? Do we have a nervous Nelly here that when I had one a couple weeks ago for training, the guy was a nervous Nelly. And I said to the client, I said, dude, this guy shouldn't be doing X, Y, Y, and Z. Why? He's in a nervous wreck. Is he like that all the time? Because if he's in a nervous wreck, I can tell you what, this might not be a good match for him. Or maybe there's something else going on. Can you find him a different assignment? Right? And the client said, yeah, you know what? You're right. He's a good guy. Let's find a different spot for him. Okay, great. Here we have another one. Citation one, item 3. 29 CFR 1910-179. The following items were not inspected for defects at intervals as defined in J12 of this section, specifically indicated including observation during operation for any defects which might appear between regular inspections. And we're talking about hoists here. Not inspected. Right? So the hoists, I always tell people, inspect them like once a year by a third party. Especially the big ones, right? This is a 3-ton hoist. And also a daily inspection prior to use, done by preferably some kind of competent person. That was $6,453. Citation 1, item 4, listener label electrical equipment was not used or installed in accordance with instructions included in the listing or labeling. So circuit breakers are being used as a switch to turn lights on and power off in the building without being rated as a SWD. I'm not sure what that is. So it was $4,800. So rather than a light switch, for example, the standard light switch, they're just going over the circuit panel and start flipping those things back and forth. That could in itself could be dangerous. Those are only to be used, for example, for occasional use. You're going to turn it on, you're going to turn it off, blah, blah, blah. If you're turning it on and off all the time, eventually something is going to break because it wasn't designed for that. Number one, it's not hitting some type of a rating here. That's not rated for that kind of situation. They got $4,800. I think installing a couple of light switches is less than that. I might be wrong. Citation one, item 5A. Type of violation, serious. This is a HAZCOM situation. A container lot labeled $8,067. Citation 1, item 5B, no safety data sheets. That was a serious violation with $0. And I know these two paints. So when you have a part B, that is an epoxy, part of epoxy coating, part A and part B. And part B is corrosive often, and that is curing, right, for this. $0. Citation 2, item 1, 1910-134. This is a big one, willful, serious, $69,140. And it was from no medical monitoring. So we went into this multiple times on this show where that's critical. Why? Again, with those imitation respirators during COVID, we had a situation where I saw someone have a seizure-ridden one. Would not have been medically cleared for that. So that's with that kind. With this kind, definitely with a regular half-face respirator, that is critical. $69,140. Citation 2, item 2. Inspections on hoists. That's $82,964. Citation 2, item 3. Workers and other persons adjacent to the welding area were not protected from the rays by non-combustible or flame-proof screens or shields. Employees were not utilizing welding screens in the welding area. Again, that's a very common thing. My brother John got hit in the face with an arc flash from a arc weld. It was not fun. He sat in the dark for 4 days with his eyes infected. His eyes actually got infected from it. It was horrible. Sat in the dark with sunglasses on. Couldn't even watch TV. Citation to item for another willful serious. No HAZCOM training. $82,964 for a grand total of $348,683. Gotta love it. It would have been cheaper to just go along and do what you need to do. This is from a Braintree, Massachusetts. This is also a company that I believe we have. I've worked with them, I believe, here. Yes, I have done work with this company. Yes. When was this issued? 2-8. Okay, so after the 15 days, gonna come up. Well, heard of one company, worked with this company on a project already. Citation 1, item 1, the employer did not initiate and maintain programs which provided for frequent and regular inspections of the job site by a competent person. So this is, employees are exposed to multiple fall hazards, eye and head injuries because the employer did not provide frequent and regular inspections by a competent person. $7,098. Citation 2, item 1, willful serious fall protection violations. People 6 foot or higher. This is a construction company. They had multiple things cited, and this was $70,982 willful. Citation 2, item 2. Here we have another fall protection requirements. No competent person. So the employer does not have a program to ensure compliance with fall protection requirements and does not designate any competent person to ensure that workers use appropriate fall protection. To abate the site, an employer must initiate and maintain a program of fall protection. $70,982. Citation to item 3A, portable ladder problems. Did not extend ladders above a wall, extension ladder 3 foot or above the landing surface. Almost $71,000. Citation 2, item 3B, willful serious. Employees using ladders or carrying objects are those that could cause the employer to lose balance and fall. Again, bags, equipment bags. That was zero on there, but this was a willful. And repeat, multiple instances here of this. Citation 3, item 1, they just pinned them for willful. Repeat serious, No hard hats. $14,195. Citation 3, item 2. No safety glasses. No face protection. $35,000. That was a willful repeat series. Multiple incidents. Next one was scaffolding. Not erected or trained or anything by under the direction of a competent person. Multiple times, $35,488. Citation 3 and item 3B, repeat serious. Here we have pre-fall on a scaffold more than 10 feet. We're not protected from falling to a lower level. This one was $0. Citation 3, item 3C, type of violation serious. Ladders used to support the ladder jack scaffold did not meet requirements of whatever. Again, they were cited multiple times for this here, allegedly. $0. And citation 3, item 3D, another $0, which was a, again, ladders out of spec, not being used properly. And the rest were zero. And another one, other than serious, not providing records within four business hours, 1,014, for a grand total of $306,229. Gotta, I don't know. Stop breaking the law. No, I guess. So we're going to be wrapping things up here. We hope to be on the air tomorrow. If not tomorrow, then probably Friday. Let us get our outro. You have an intro, you got to have an outro. And we will be seeing you tomorrow. Have a great day.
In this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.